This podcast is rated S for science and also for spoilers and swearing. There's going to be swearing.
It's a dinosaur.
Something is killing these people and sucking them dry.
Run! It's a stampede!
Hello and welcome to the first episode of Cinematica Animalia. This is a podcast where we take a movie monster or a movie animal, a creature, a parasite, a plant, whatever, and break it down to see how it might function in the real world through looking at their ecology and their physiology. My name is Sam Perrin. I run Nature According to Sam. With me today are two of my three usual co-hosts. Adam Hartig, my fellow ecologist and fellow author at Ecology for the Masses, and one half of our component that looks at physiology, veterinarian Dave, who operates in Canada and whose last name I can't really show because he might get looked up by patients. Anyway, not with us today is TJ, who's also a vet working in Canada. TJ is off somewhere, presumably with his hand up a horse's bum. Okay. Horses are incredibly hard to keep alive, right? You were telling me once that they're just like...
Horses are terrible animals. They
are rather difficult in terms of they have multiple systems. Example, they can't vomit. They break legs quite easy. They are...
They weigh a million fucking pounds.
They're obligate breathers, so... They can only breathe out their nose, so if they get a sinus infection, we're like, oh god, oh god, oh god, oh god, oh god.
If they break their leg, you have to shoot them because they can't stand on it, they can't lay down because they die if they lay down for too long.
So the British saw that and thought, that's the thing we want to ride around on all days.
So there's already a couple of horse groups that have decided to boycott the podcast following this discussion, so...
All right, well, anyway, I guess that, you know, first segment of the day is news. Adam's spent the last weekend in New Orleans, the Ecological Society of America conference. How was that?
Yeah, it was real good. It was August the 6th through the 10th, so I ended on my birthday, which is great. There were surprisingly a couple people from actually outside of America. I thought it was just going to be a more local kind of within the nation conference. I went to Evolution, or ESEB, the European Society of Evolutionary Biology, a year ago, and so that was my first real conference, but this one I actually presented my own research. So it was nice to present the research, but it was also kind of a bummer in that I had my perspectives colored by this, in my opinion, superior conference in Europe, where with your price of admission, they feed you lunches, you get coffee throughout the day, the talks are split up more easily, but... My conference, I work on host-parasite relationships and the ecology of parasitism for my research. And so my talks were going during the host-parasite interaction session, which is taking place at the same time as the disease ecology and epidemiology section. And those are basically two sides of the same coin. And they're completely different sides of the conference center, which was bullshit. Because it took literally 5 minutes to walk from one to the other. And so you couldn't really bounce back and forth between the sections.
So for people who aren't, you know, familiar with conferences and that sort of stuff, you would think that if you go to a conference where everybody studies ecology or everybody studies evolution, you'd be, you know, there'd be tons of interesting stuff. You'd find every course would be interesting.
It's very niche.
And yeah, you know, you've got especially at a place like ESEB or the ESB, there's incredibly niche things. And if there's one session that everybody's at, and that means nobody's coming to your session and stuff like that, it's, can be frustrating. Dave, what do you got for news on the vet side?
Any drive-by mooses?
Any what? Any
drive-by moosings?
No drive-by moosings.
We saw a moose. We were on the way last weekend. We came from the cabin, my girlfriend's parents' cabin, which is down in the south of Norway on the way back up. And this moose just ran straight across the road. We almost hit the fucker. It was a very large female, maybe 5 or 6 years, and it just went flying across the road. Yeah.
Would have ended your life.
It would have. I mean, you know, we've got kangaroos in Australia, and they look small, but they can really do some damage to your car. But a moose doesn't look small, and it will do even more damage to your car because those things are fucking enormous.
Oh, it comes right through the...
You want to talk about charismatic megafauna? I had a... I went golfing with my dad last week in Kentucky for the family vacation. There was a cute little turtle on the course, and it was fierce.
It wasn't the airplanes. It was beauty killed the beast.
Speaking of charismatic megafauna, this week's topic is King nice. Kong from, I know, right? That was such a good segue.
Nice.
I'm very happy with that. We've already mastered podcasting.
I'm not sure if we'd say charismatic, but yes.
Well,
I mean, it's hard not to look at it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I know. I don't know if I'd put like King Kong in the charismatic category.
Well, look, I mean, I'm sure he's got charm. We there's no Lady Kongs in the movies. We haven't seen him interact with any. So, you know,
fair enough. Yeah, I mean, but,
you know what they say about Lady Kongs? Yeah. Great tits.
Jesus. in the comics, actually. Yeah, no, okay, let's not get into that. Family friendly, apart from all the swearing.
I'm imagining that if we actually had, as we'll discuss later, some megaflora on the island, it would help for sort of getting a bouquet of roses or something to bring back to Lady Kong if he spent all night, you know, fighting or drinking with the skull monsters. So, like...
There actually was a Lady Kong movie.
Was there? There was a Mrs. Kong?
Oh, 1980... Hang on, okay, so we'll get into... Anyway, look, we'll get into it later. But anyway, basically, so this week we're doing Kong from Kong Skull Island because, you know, we've got the new Godzilla film coming out soon. We thought we'd get started with some of Legendary's past creatures. What I'm going to do before we get into the physiology stuff and then the ecology stuff is just go through a brief history of Kong in the movies.
Okay.
So where are we? Yeah, he first appeared in 1933. That's the classic kind of King Kong, the very first one. He was all stop motion animation back then. Now, two things that really don't hold up. A, it was supposed to be the pinnacle of special effects at the time, and it really received a lot of awards. I don't know if you guys have seen the 1933 version lately.
I have. It's real bad.
Yeah, it's not the height of realism. And it's also ranked by Rotten Tomatoes as the number one horror film of all time.
Really?
Number one.
Horror film of all time.
Interesting, because A Quiet Place is 95% rated and it's certified fresh, so that rating's not changing anytime soon. So King Kong from 1930 has 100% rating. I'm going to fight someone.
Well, look, I mean, it's a classic of the genre. What can you say? For those who can't see, Adam is holding a very small bourbon bottle that he got from, I'm presuming, duty free on the way back.
I'm now imagining this becoming evidence in the debate that goes on after Adam walks up to the Rotten Tomatoes headquarters and whips his tiny little bottle at their window, cheers from outside, and then runs away down the street.
Scales the
wearing
building.
My bright pink sunglasses.
With a blonde in one hand, as Kong do. There was a lesser-known sequel, actually, later that year called The Son of Kong, which was critically panned, didn't do very well, that most people may not have heard of, and it was about an albino gorilla that they find on Skull Island. They think it's the Son of Kong, but they don't really know.
It was Skull Island, then?
Well, it was called Skull Island, right from the very start. Whoa. The island was Skull Island.
What do you mean they don't know if it's his son or not?
Well, they just find this albino gorilla, and one of them's just like, this is the Son of Kong. They don't really know. All they did was find an albino gorilla, and they were just like, yeah, that's definitely the Son of Kong. It's very important. Look, these guys were not scientists, all right? They didn't know how to science properly. They didn't know what the fuck they were doing. We'll get into some more of that later. So the next appearance he made in any of the monster movies was actually the Japanese, the Toho Company. And he turned up fighting Godzilla in, I think it was 1966. It was actually interesting. This was only ever the third ever Godzilla film. And it's only the second monster that Godzilla ever fought, which I thought was really cool. As with all the Toho films, he was played by a man in a very obvious suit.
In a giant rubber suit.
Nice.
And it's the best ever.
It's a lot of fun, all right? And the other thing that's a lot of fun here is that he can somehow harness electricity and use it to grow stronger. So there's a point in the film in which they try to keep him out of a city by constructing enormous electrical wires, and he just charges straight through it, and he grows much stronger because he absorbs all the electricity. He's also defeated by Godzilla in battle later in the film and gets brought back to life by a strike of lightning. We're not assessing that version of Kong, so we don't have to get into that, but
It's almost as good as the 1995 video New York, New York by Snoop Dogg and the Dog Pound, where they are giant Godzilla-sized monsters smashing up New York City.
Well, now I know what I need to watch. All right, perfect. My evening is booked.
It's amazing.
You should also, if you want to get into some really fun stuff, there's an ad of Godzilla playing basketball against a giant Charles Barkley from back in the day. And that is something really quite special.
Anyway, God, Charles Barkley.
Yeah, but another interesting thing about that is before they figured out it was Godzilla versus King Kong, the original idea was for Kong to go and fight a giant version of Frankenstein's monster. That was going to be the yeah. So maybe that's where the electricity thing comes from, because that's a part of the Frankenstein mythos, right?
Yeah. Electricity, Frankenstein. Yes.
All right. Anyway, so that was all good fun. And then there's one more King Kong movie in the Toho verse. It's just King Kong versus a bunch of them. There's no Godzilla in this one. He battles a bunch of weird creatures, including a Gorosaurus, and as you do when it's Toho, a mechanical version of himself called Mechani-Kong.
Of course.
You know, yeah, of course.
Absolutely. It's a natural progression.
Exactly. You make a big creature, you have that creature battle a giant robot version of that creature. Although,
if you don't fight the metal version, are you really existing?
Full disclosure, Mechagodzilla was one of my favorite monsters from back then, so yeah.
I was just thinking, I'm like, isn't that how like your PhD defense goes in terms of like they make you fight a giant robotic version of yourself at the end?
No, it's a giant robotic version of whatever animal you're studying, whatever plant you're studying.
Good luck.
Yeah, so I'm going up against a giant mechanical fish.
I loved classic Godzilla. I'm not going to go... I mean, Mecha Godzilla is fantastic, don't get me wrong, but classic Godzilla is where it's at. I mean, I think everybody also loves Mothra at the end of the day, right?
I don't know that one. I liked Gigan and Destroyer.
Fuck Mothra. There we go. That's my first controversial statement. I'm going to bring you onto this. Fuck Mothra. It was pointless. It's going to be... I think that's going to be the worst part of the next Godzilla film.
Well, Mothra is never supposed to be like the super interesting, like crazy hard to fight. It's just like the kind of the beautiful, loving humanity ones. And they always have like, I wonder if the woman who plays, I think her name's Bobby Jo Williams or something like that. Or Bobby, no, Millie Bobby Brown from Stranger Things.
Millie Bobby, she's playing Bobby Jo Williams.
Black Joe Lewis, you know.
The redneck version of Millie Bobby Brown, Bobby Jo Williams. Okay.
Reggie Ray.
But anyway, moving on. Then there was the, 10 years later, there was the first remake, 1976 version, and this is the only one to figure that has the World Trade Center instead of the Empire State Building in it, as the one that he climbs up, yeah. Interestingly enough, Jessica Lange and Jeff Bridges were in that movie.
Yeah, and Jeff Bridges is fantastic in that one.
Really? Okay, fair enough. I have not seen it.
It's worth a watch. It's not great, but Jeff Bridges... kind of steals the show. It's a young Jeff Bridges too. It's a very good looking young Jeff Bridges, and he just kind of steals the film.
Jeff Bridges always looks.
I don't know if I like the idea of young Jeff Bridges. In my mind, Jeff Bridges has always looked 50.
He just starts in the dude, and he never changes.
Yeah, he came out of the womb looking like the dude, and he just grew up into a bigger version of that. Like that's how he came out.
What about Tron?
He was young in Tron.
I've never seen Tron.
Me either.
Okay, and anyway, there was a sequel to that movie which featured Lady Kong, literally called Lady Kong. She wasn't like Queen Kong or anything like that. She was called Lady Kong. Yeah.
That seems a little bit derogatory in terms of.
Yeah. Here you go.
It's 2018. We can have Lady Kongs now.
It was 1986 when this came out. So go easy. Hang on. Here we go. This is the description from Wikipedia. Well, not from Wikipedia. From the Kong Godzilla wiki. Lady Kong closely resembles King Kong, but a few notable differences in keeping with her gender. She has more pronounced breasts.
Blazing the way for feminism for years to come. Good job, Lady Kong. Good job.
Pronounced breasts is the name of my improv troupe.
Anyway, then there's a big 20-year gap until Peter Jackson gets in on the act. The Peter Jackson movie actually won 3 Academy Awards, all for visual and sound effects, I'm assuming.
For special effects, right?
Yeah, it must have been.
Because it was a shit
So that's
movie.
Actually the first time where he's represented as a big, like, silverback gorilla as opposed to some weird kind of hybrid. Because he very much is just a big fucking silverback in that. But that did... I mean,
Which the physics on him actually would have worked a lot better than...
Yeah, because he's
some of the later
he's
Kong.
On his knuckles all the time.
Yeah, he's on four limbs.
Yeah, and he's much smaller as well.
But he fights not one, not two, but three Tyrannosaurus Rexes.
Yeah, and that scene in the
that's how you know he's a badass.
That scene in where he like breaks the Tyrannosaurus's jaw, that's actually like a direct kind of homage to the very first film, which is I enjoyed anyway. And now we get to 2017.
King Kong ain't got shit on me.
So we're at 2017. Kong Skull Island comes out. It's the second film in the Toho MonsterVerse, well, not Toho, Legendary's Tohoverse, or whatever they want to call it, after Godzilla, which I actually quite liked. I know Dave has Godzilla's very great. Differing opinions on that. Yeah, Dave's not on board.
Dave's Canadian, so what does it matter?
Yeah, but I like Godzilla, and I like Kong Skull Island as well. I thought it was good. I thought the creature designs were creative, at least. I mean, I know a lot of people had issue with the plot being a bit shit, but...
For Kong?
No, not the plot. Sorry, the characters being a little underdeveloped, but I didn't really care.
It was nice seeing Tom Hiddleston as not a pale, oily, greasy guy, and being a thin, kind of tan, handsome, rugged dude.
He was just kind of Loki, but less of a dick.
Yeah.
He wasn't nearly conniving enough.
I don't know. Brie Larson. Fair enough. Brie Larson was good. I hadn't really seen her in much until this.
Yeah.
John C. Reilly was great.
Yeah. Yes, he was a lot of good fun.
Yeah, and you know what? Samuel L. Jackson is always fun in those kinds of roles.
Yeah. I really enjoyed Samuel L. Jackson in this. I think he got more like story than anyone else.
He did.
I think his was the most kind of compelling. Yeah.
And he's still menacing as fuck, like he always is. John Goodman too, even though he wasn't really being a villain, like he was great because it's John Goodman and he'll always be great.
No, and his death actually completely took me by surprise. I thought he was going to make it through a bigger chunk of the movie.
But one of my favorite scenes in this, in terms of creature design, was that thing where you see the skull crawler like knock that guy flying and then reach out with a tongue, grab him, and just reel him back in.
Yep,
that was that was fantastic. Yeah, but anyway, it's not the traditional Kong story. It's kind of an allegory to Vietnam. I guess they've got this bunch of soldiers who are recruited to go with a bunch of scientists and Tom Hiddleston out to a jungle to do some bullshit ground documentation. But John Goodman knows what's up. He's really trying to get scientific evidence of these enormous creatures.
Well, he thinks they're coming from the Earth, because I forgot that one dude's character that he recruits, the guy that played Dr. Dre in Straight Outta Compton. His whole dissertation was about the hollow earth theory, and he got laughed out of the room. But John Goodman's character, because he's insane, was like, no, like, work for me, because the earth is hollow and it's full of monsters.
Ooh. Yeah, but I mean, I get the feeling that in this universe, that's not such a ridiculous concept.
No, and they were clearly, this was another trying to build your own Marvel Avengers just with monsters kind of movie.
Hey, but I mean, I don't think they've done a bad job here.
No,
it's working, because they actually did it the right way. Yeah. Start off with a solid movie, no matter what you think, Dave, and then you build off, a arguably better second one, and then the third one is going to have King Ghidorah, it's going to have Mothra, it's going to be fucking amazing.
I actually think Rodan's going to look fucking great. Like, that trailer looks amazing when Rodan just, like, spreading his wings atop a volcano. Oh, apparently Rodan is a volcano or something in this. I mean, they really like their volcanoes. They've got
like,
that fucking magma turtle, which we'll talk about later on.
In the older movies, Rodan is, like... not like a symbiote, but he's kind of like the spirit of a volcano, or like a culture somewhere. I don't know if it's supposed to be in Japan, but maybe an indigenous people's like deity, and the volcano is like the embodiment of him, and he comes from it, just like Godzilla comes from the sea, and King Ghidorah is from space, and he's like straight up evil.
Okay, yeah,
Mothra's good.
But King Ghidorah was also an allegory to like Chinese domination over Japan, wasn't he?
Probably. Probably.
Yeah.
With the dragon and all that.
Yeah, well, that's... I think that's what it was, yeah. But that's one of my favorite... Godzilla vs. King Ghidorah is one of my favorite old movies. Like, when they... Because what these aliens do is they go back in time and they remove the dinosaur that becomes Godzilla from nuclear mutation from the island. And they leave these three Furby-looking motherfuckers on the island. And they become mutated and become King Ghidorah. It's very, very, but it's very sketchy science. It's just like, oh, we'll just leave three Furbies on the island and they'll definitely turn into King Ghidorah. Yeah. But no, look, anyway, but that brings us, that brings us up to speed. Yeah. So for all you people who didn't go and see the movie, which you should, because it is a lot of fun and it's out on Netflix, I think, in most countries at the moment.
Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you Kong, the eighth wonder of the world!
So Dave's going to kick us off with some of the physiological... the physiological fun surrounding Kong, and then Adam and I are going to take over and look at the ecology of him. But yeah, the aim of this isn't to make the movies more boring, it's to make the science more fun, okay? So get on board. Dave, kick us off. Where's...
Sure. So, I mean, we're talking about King Kong here. I wanted to make, like, a couple general comments, and I figured the best way that we were going to do this, as we discussed, is kind of to go through the different systems and talk about, like, hey, this is going to be a really big problem for Kong to try and overcome this. And then have sort of a discussion about, like, what are some possible solutions or way that he could get around this, or whether or not he's just going to be, unfortunately, totally screwed. So the first big thing is just figuring out approximately how big Kong is going to be. So I think, like, we talked about this in terms of, I think we settled on 100 feet, right? That was our final discussion for him.
Yeah. That's what the official comic says.
And we know that he's supposed to be, like, growing and get bigger in the comic, but we've just, it's hard enough to, you know, kind of compensate for him at the moment. So we've just said that this is Kong's final.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I mean, I think that makes sense, is kind of to make him an adult, cause otherwise he gets really hard to deal with if we're thinking he's a juvenile, and his weight and energy requirements and everything are just going to be very difficult.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we won't go through, like, all the small details and everything else of how I got to these numbers, but we can have a basic talk about, like, Kong is going to be stuck with something called the square cube law, which is just the idea that, like, anytime you take a cube and you double its height or double its, then you are also going to have to change all the other dimensions. So its surface area is going to increase by the power of 2, and its total volume or weight is going to have to increase by the power of 3. Yep. So I ended up taking, like, a regular chimp and a regular gorilla and figuring out approximately how much bigger Kong is going to be than them. Because I don't think we really have a good decision on exactly what Kong is in terms of he's some sort of chimp-gorilla hybrid.
Yeah, well, I think there's probably just a common ancestor that they've both evolved from back in the day. Yeah.
So in terms of figuring out approximately what his weight was, I did some calculations and then kind of took an average between the chimp and the gorilla. And for the sake of the discussion, let's say he's around 1,500 tons.
Okay.
If he's 100 feet tall, and that's, you know, 1,360,777 kilograms.
Okay.
Best guess. So then we had to, like, deal with the biggest problem that, and I know we've talked about this, Kong is going to have, is his metabolism is just going to be off the charts. He is this absolutely 100-foot chimp gorilla, charilla, or grimp that is, like, wandering. Yeah, grimp. I like grimp.
I like grimp.
All right, grimp.
I like grimp.
This giant 100-foot grimp that is just, like, wandering through and having to do, like, his own thing. Yeah, so we've got his weight, we've got his height, and the next sort of thing that we have to figure out is, what's his metabolism going to be, right? Like, what is he going to need? How many kilocals, how many donuts, what other measurement of food is he going to need per day just to try and keep rolling, to keep up, to keep going? Because we imagine that he's going to be eating huge quantities of food.
Yeah.
So to sort of figure this out, I found a couple of different sort of formulas and equations. The big thing is that Kong is going to have to be bound by something called Keibler's Law. And it's the idea that although his mass is going to drastically increase, his metabolism is not just going to, like, if he doubles in size, his metabolism doesn't increase by a factor of 2. Okay. It's the idea that everything is kind of going to scale up along kind of like a basically a logarithmic scaling to try and deal with the fact that as he gets bigger, he's actually going to have a lot easier time maintaining heat. He's going to have a lot or easier time sort of keeping his bulk, as opposed to, like, a small mouse has to have a really high metabolic rate because it just bleeds heat.
Yeah.
It's this tiny little guy. It's got nothing, as opposed to an elephant has a much more smaller proportional basal metabolic rate
because
the elephant can do it.
So when you're talking about this, when you're that big and have this heat, does that kind of relate to the idea, the debate over dinosaurs being endothermic or ectothermic, warm-blooded versus cold-blooded? but it doesn't really matter because when you're that big, you just hold all that heat regardless.
Yeah, and it becomes a big problem for a lot of things. They had a couple of cool papers out a few years ago on bear metabolism. Okay. And we used to think that bears hibernated, and all the new research that's come back says, like, no, they can't because they would have to drop their body temperature down to truly hibernate. And if they did, there's no way they could get their body temperature back up. So instead, bears actually stay relatively warm, and they're kind of in this, like, semi-hibernation state, but it's not a true hibernation that bears go into.
Do they go into torpor?
It's not a true torpor either, because that's the problem, is if they torpored, they would have to, like, bring their body temperature down, and they'd have to bring a lot of their metabolic process, and they're just too big. They can't do it, because the amount of energy it would take them to, like, scale down, they would then bleed that heat off, because the big thing is if you want to, like, hibernate or torpor, you have to, like, lower your body temperature to lower your metabolic requirements.
Okay.
And they just can't. The amount that they would have to do, and then they would have to, like, basically bring themselves back up, it's just, it doesn't make sense from an energy perspective.
Okay.
So this is going to feed in later. It's going to be a problem for Kong. But so I did a couple of different calculations just using, like, a simplified version of Keibler's law. And I also ended up finding a couple of, like, modified calculations online because other people have come in and sort of made their own assessment of approximately what he's going to be like or where he should be. Mm-hmm. But for the sake of discussion, I ended up coming out with he's got a basal metabolic rate of approximately 1,777,534 kilocals per day.
Okay, so about 1.8 million.
So the hard thing is once he starts moving. So in veterinary medicine, when we take, like, an active animal and we say, like, all right, they're moving, we figure that their basal metabolic or their daily energy requirement is going to be about 2 to 5 times what their basal metabolic rate is.
So a real conservative estimate, that puts him up to about 3.5 million calories a day.
At the very bottom, more comfortable, just based on how active we see him in the movie, saying he sits at about 6 million kilocals per day.
Yeah, because he does, you know, he's going to climb mountains and do some
And he's running around, he's doing all his things. So now we've got his weight.
He's very fast.
Yeah, he is, and he does, like, the energy requirements alone of, like, smashing with that skull crawler through that huge fight. Yeah. He would probably pass out halfway through that fight. He would just, his blood sugar would just completely plummet, and he would just have fallen asleep, and everybody, including Tom Hiddleston, would have gotten eaten.
Okay.
So, out of curiosity, I went through the film, and the only time that I could see him eating was that giant squid that he, like, fights his way with. So I did some conservative estimates for the giant squid, sort of figured out what the average kilocals an average squid has, and then kind of scaled it up the same way that I scaled up Kong to get a mass. Because I figured that the giant squid looks like it's about 120 feet compared to Kong. He's, like, holding it kind of over his head, and we can see there's some parts up. So I'm like, all right.
Yeah.
So if he was to eat the entire squid, so head to toe, no pieces missed, get all that, like, tissue in there. He would end up having
or mantle to arm,
exactly, right? Probably have to end up eating the beak as well, just to get that little bit of extra, make him more regular in the mornings.
Yeah.
He would end up having to eat approximately 8 of those squids a day in order to, like, survive. He would have to find 8 squids in fresh water and carry those things off to chomp away.
Could he be, like, Adam and I were talking about this, you've got a lot of arthropods on the island, like that giant spider, there's other giant bugs there apparently, like that big fucking stick insect, I think it's called a spore mantis in the comics.
Yeah, and so I went...
Yeah, the only problem with that one is that on the in the comics, it's not really a mantis, it's a parasite that's living inside this log-looking structure.
Right. Oh!
And all it is doing is kind of living in there, taking prey in and just digesting it. But there's also these, I think they're calling them swamp locusts, and they look a lot like the aquatic larvae of various insects, like dragonflies, damselflies, mayflies, all those. And it's just this massive slug-looking thing that has all these legs that stick out of the water that mimic trees. And that's just supposed to be another gigantic arthropod. Okay. It's probably 10, 15 meters.
Yeah, so I did some conservative calculations. And again, if we're talking about those things, he's going to have to be wandering around eating like 60 of those a day. He's going to have to find them on the island and consume. And he's probably going to have to vary his diet because he obviously can't eat just squid.
Yeah.
So I imagine he would be eating some of those insects. And that's good. Gorillas in the wild eat insects. They don't eat meat, but chimps do eat meat. So if we're calling him a grimp,
chain, yeah.
Yeah, then our grimp theoretically could be eating meat.
Yeah.
The biggest problem is going to be sort of his vegetation requirements, because both the chimp and the gorilla spend a lot of time, and we've talked about this, we didn't see any megafauna watching this film,
megaflora.
Right?
Megaflora, yeah.
No. Or megaflora, sorry.
Nothing.
Flora.
Yeah, like the plants are normal size, so just as a joke, for a conservative estimate of how many bananas per day he'd have to eat, and as Adam and I were discussing before the podcast, if he's eating like normal gorillas, like, or sorry, normal bananas, if Kong goes into the store and gets normal bananas,
yeah,
then he's gonna have to eat approximately 65,000 of those per day. But if he's eating like wild bananas that have like the nutritional value, that number is going to double.
Yeah.
So like, unless there are,
at least, because it's mostly seed and they're like,
yeah,
really
kind of, yeah,
bananas we get from stores are things that we've selectively bred. They look nothing like that in the wild,
right? And so that's an estimate of a very, very sugar-rich, high kilocal fruit.
Yeah.
So if he's just sitting around tearing big chunks of vegetation out of the island, I mean, I imagine he's going to deforest it really, really quick.
Yeah.
And the poor villagers are going to be living in some little, like, rock hut by the end of the day, sort of, like, very dependent on fish and other things like that.
Yeah. Okay, so yeah, that's our first big problem.
Yeah, he's really not meeting that unless there are a lot of giant squids around that island that we never saw, or there is some sort of giant plant or vegetation that he is just completely getting on a regular basis. He's going to be in a lot of trouble.
Yeah.
The other problem of sort of like his fluid requirements is going to be a different matter. We usually, when we take like a large animal, and in veterinary medicine, if we're trying to sort of predict how much fluid per day that they're going to need.
Yeah.
The calculation that we end up doing is, all right, he's going to take about 50 to 70 mils per kilogram per day.
Yeah.
And that's just maintenance. That's not to get him all the way up there. That's just Kong sitting around wanting to drink a ton. And if Kong is wanting to just drink from like a fresh water source, he's going to end up having to drink approximately 81 million milliliters of fluid per day.
Okay.
It's sort of,
how many liters is that?
It's approximately
like 810,000.
No, 81,000. 81,000.
81,000 liters. Okay.
Yeah. Well, so that's a lot.
So 81,000.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. But it's not that bad in terms of, like, I looked up various data, like the Loch Ness, for example, its total volume is far beyond what he would end up having to reach.
Loch Ness, though, is an incredibly deep lake.
It is, yeah. But even if I was going through, like,
and massive
some other lakes or other water sources, I think he might be okay in this category. I think that it's like a couple of deer or moose drinking from a freshwater lake aren't going to use it up. Humans do, but as we talked about, humans water their lawn, we put it in sports bottles, we ship it all over the world,
yeah,
we move it into areas it's not supposed, yeah, to be. So water actually might not be Kong's biggest thing. He might be okay if he's just like sitting down and drinking from the lake. The big issue is that gorillas get most of their fluid from the fruit and the vegetables they consume.
Yeah.
And he's not going to have any of that. So he's basically going to have to learn to just sit at the lake and drink on a regular,
yeah,
basis.
Or he could be getting it from the different organisms he's consuming.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I was touching on how in the comics, they really make a point of this, and you can somewhat see it in the movie just from the way these different animals look, is there are these weird plant-animal,
yeah,
hybrids. And they touch on this more in the comics, saying that they actually have like cellulose structures in their,
oh, cool,
bodies. And that's the,
yeah,
stuff that plants are made of.
Yeah.
So if a lot of these organisms are, in fact, these weird plant hybrids, if he's consuming them, not just the squid, but things like those giant stick insects,
yeah,
these spiders, for example, which are like bamboo spider hybrids, he could be getting some kind of cellulose and moisture,
yeah,
from them as,
okay,
well.
Okay, so, yeah, so I don't think fluid's going to sink his boat.
Yeah.
And
the other thing
is
that
he might actually be okay.
You've got the island itself is very, like, there's a lot of variation in the elevation. Like, you've got a lot of weird mountain things, which means there's also going to be a fair bit of variation in, like, the depth of the freshwater lakes there. So there's potentially a couple of really deep lakes there.
Yeah, and it's surrounded by tropical storms.
And
yeah, exactly. So you're going to...
Yeah, it's raining constantly.
That is
actually one
of the more minor complaints I have about this movie. It's supposed to be around the equator in the middle of a fucking storm, but we never see it rain once.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
And it's sunny. Like, the storm clouds are never over the island. Why do they just drop people in? Why the fuck
also,
the fucking storm?
Why the fuck are there the northern lights or the southern lights or whatever? You're not even close to the Arctic or the Antarctic. It's really, it's very strange.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway,
well, you
sorry.
Looked at, you, yeah, anyways.
I looked up the coordinates, but we'll get into that later because that was
So the skeletal system, which was something sort of we need to talk about, this category, he's simultaneously going to be okay and screwed at the exact same time. So the good news is that I did a lot of the calculations for sort of, is his bone mass going to be able to hold him up? And he's in a lot of trouble because Kong is only walking on 2 feet in this film. If this was like the Peter Jackson one and he was walking on all four limbs, he would probably be in much better shape. But the fact that he wants to walk like us, carrying, you know, 1,500 tons on his little legs, is going to make things kind of difficult. So the good news is bone is really, really strong. Theoretically, his bones are actually going to hold him up. If I did the calculations right, his femur will be able to hold up almost 900 million kilograms. And since he's only 1.3, that's a single femur. If he's got both of them on, and that's taking with, you know, I estimated around 40% of the femur being composed of marrow and kind of took that out of the calculation. So he might be okay. The big problem is going to be movement. Because we know that as a creature gets bigger and as like the size of their limb like enhances in length, their muscle fiber may grow, but they're not going to get stronger. This whole idea that like giant animals are super duper strong, it doesn't really work because your fulcrum changes. And so does sort of the points at which you're physically going to be able to pull. So if he's got these giant arms and these giant legs, the amount of energy it's going to take him to actually like lift his legs and put them down, he's going to have specialized muscle fibers called slow twitch because he's going to need stamina. And it's going to take him like 30 seconds per leg lift kind of thing to like go up and then bring this bad boy leg down. And he's not going to be super strong. He's not going to be able to pull helicopters out while moving at top speed. He's going to have these sort of like slow swings and slow movements, kind of like a mouse is buzzing around you, but an elephant takes those nice slow steps and brings the feet down kind of as it goes. And Kong is going to be bound by the same thing. So I don't think he's going to be very strong. I think his skeleton might be able to like totally hold him up, all things considered. But he's going to be super slow walking. So we've got some ways that we can potentially fix this. And we can potentially try if Kong wanted to walk on all four limbs.
Yeah.
Might be okay. It's going to like separate a lot more of his weight. It's going to reduce how much he's carrying. But as we discussed, he might be okay to walk on two legs. He definitely cannot jump. All right. There is no way that his knees, there's no way that his joints will be able to support him. If he jumps and he brings his weight down, he will collapse into a heap, crying the entire time, and then he will hobble around the island for the rest of his days.
Yeah.
So as I talked about before, he's probably going to want to shuffle. That's, I think, the best strategy for him is just kind of to shuffle through. And I think he might end up having to take a lesson from the elephant. I don't think that if Kong wanted to keep going, he could have toes.
Yeah, okay.
I think he's going to have to basically have elephant stumps at the bottom and kind of like basically hobble along kind of penguin style on those bad boys.
Oh, man, this is a much less charismatic animal.
Yeah, because he's okay. The thing is, his one femur will theoretically hold the weight of his entire body. So if he lifts a leg and puts it back down, he should be okay. The bones are going to hold up. Yeah. The biggest problem that Kong is going to run into trouble with is it's just his joints, his poor knees, that if like he brings any serious weight down or he falls from anything, and his poor little toes, if you've gotten 1,500 tons of monkey that's like swinging a leg along and he accidentally does what you or I would do.
Ape.
He's an ape.
Yeah. He's an ape.
And hits a toe off something. If he stumps his toe, he's basically going to knock it back into his foot. And so, I mean, like he could have toes. I just don't think he could have toes for very long.
Yeah.
And he probably wouldn't be very happy with toes. So he might be able to have toes if he goes the direction of birds or what we think some dinosaurs did in terms of having like pneumatized bones. It's going to make his bones a lot lighter. They should still be potentially strong-ish.
Pneumatized bones?
Yeah, so birds actually store a lot of air inside of their bones. They've got hollow bones.
Hollow.
And okay, it could be one way that he could sort of like cut down on a big chunk of his weight. And if he did that, then it's going to be a lot easier for him, like muscle-wise, to lift his limbs, to move them around. And he might be able to have toes. He might even be able to have almost like a three-pronged kind of like T-Rex kind of arrangement going on.
Can he still hold himself up if he's got hollow bones?
I don't know. So I don't... the pneumatized bones are going to cut down on his strength. I still think that he'll be able to like make that gap. Because we know dinosaurs did, and I know TJ and I were having that discussion that, like, he potentially, pneumatized bones might do the trick.
Yeah.
Because potentially it'll cut down on his weight, and since, like, right at the moment he only weighs, you know, 1 million kilograms or 1.3, and his current bones are able to hold up 900 million, he might be okay that if he cuts down his pneumatized and loses some of the strength, again, his joints are still going to be a big problem. He's not really going to do, like, a whole bunch of... But it might speed him up. It might make him faster. So that's one solution that he might be able to sort of get into.
Yeah.
And the other option would just be kind of shortening and thickening his bones, kind of like an elephant as well, just kind of like shrinking everything down, which would, again, yes, and I can see you laughing, would be making him sort of like hobble along on these like little legs at top speed. What was that?
Real problem selling toys.
Yeah, right. What was that Rick and Morty character? Baby legs?
Baby legs.
Baby legs. Yeah, yeah, so kind of like baby legs.
Baby legs are, or it's like the new Deadpool.
Yeah, so or the new Deadpool. This. Like that actually, if he's...
Shuffling, toeless, bloody freak of nature.
Well, reverse he's going to get a lot worse as we go on, unfortunately, okay, in terms of, like, as we talk about, like, hey, he probably couldn't do this, but, like, here's the solution. I think that if Kong could vote on a lot of these things, he'd be like, no, please don't make me do that.
Okay, fair enough.
Why am I this big?
Yeah, because as we talked about with the musculoskeletal problem, it's going to start to get into a problem. Like, if, for example, an Asian elephant can only lift approximately 25% of its own weight. Yeah. So Kong's muscular structure, at the end, he's basically going to get up to a point where, like, he can lift his own weight, but that's basically it. And maybe, like, a couple of bananas, and, like, he's really just going to have to, like, fall on the giant squid and then, like, chew it from, like, that kind of position.
And just gum it to
them. Yeah. I remember reading this piece a couple of years ago about Andre the Giant, and they said during filming of Princess of the Bride, Princess Bride. The giganticism in terms of, like, everything else that was affecting him, he could not even lift her name is escaping me, who plays the princess in the film. They had to
from
put
Wonder Woman. God, what's her name?
Anyways, they had to put her on cables for a couple of the scenes because, like, he could lift his own arms, but it's just unfortunately, like, being acromegaly as he was, it's just like the disease was taking its course and he was just weak as a kitten, sort of near the middle to end.
Okay.
Is it because he was weak or because his joints were so...
It was the joints. It was also his heart. I mean, his heart was just under so much stress. But it's just, I'm picturing Kong as sort of like, he looks really imposing, but then he kind of comes up and he's just like, ugh. And he kind of gently pushes on you and he's like, that didn't go how I thought it was going to go.
Yeah.
Well, if it took Andre the Giant 56 beers to get drunk, how many beers does Kong
I have not calculated that. I imagine that it would clear out whatever this village's brewery is. They would be very sad, sober people a lot of the time.
And all of Southeast Asia. Right.
So musculoskeletally, he's going to be in problem in terms of, like, he basically can't have any fast twitch fibers because I don't think they're going to be able to, like, get the movement. In order to, like, raise his arms, he's going to need everything to be slow twitch, like, stamina fibers, and it means that he is going to slowly shuffle his way from one side of the island to the other. He is going to be a very sad, slow grimp.
Okay.
How fast can he blink?
That's a good question. I didn't actually work that out. So we'll just go through a couple of the other structures. For his respiratory system, I worked out approximately how much he's going to need based on his metabolism and how much oxygen he's going to end up having to take in. His total lung capacity, so when his lungs are completely filled up, he's going to have filled his lungs with approximately 170,000 liters of air. Theoretically, he could maybe make these oxygen demands. He's basically just going to, like, and luckily, like, you and I, when we breathe in, we take about 5% of the oxygen out of the air that we breathe in. That's why we can do CPR. where like we can breathe out, and the oxygen we're breathing out, we're breathing in oxygen that's about 21%, and we're breathing oxygen out that's about 16%. So he might be okay. The bigger problem is that to take one of these breaths, if like we estimate based on like the size of his mouth and everything like that, it's going to take him a little less, like closer to sort of the 20 second per breath, in terms of like he's just going to be sitting there and sucking in like a whole big breath and then breathing out a whole big breath. So in terms of the amount that he's able to breathe, he's going to be able to breathe about 1.3 breaths per minute. So where he eats in the amount of time that he's breathing in and breathing out, I imagine he's going to have to hold his breath, stuff a squid in, and then breathe out. And that's going to be Kong's entire life, because just what it's going to take to fill his lungs, to physically get that much air into him through his mouth, if he's the same size as any other gorilla, chimp, or grimp combination, it's going to be a really long time. You're also going to be able to hear him like anywhere on the island as he's breathing in and breathing out. Yes, so it's going to be a lot. He's going to be sucking in and breathing out a lot of oxygen as this whole thing goes on. So I'm not quite sure where that's going to go. The other big thing is it's just the amount of energy to hold up his lungs. And I tried to work it out. He's potentially going to be okay if he's got normal sized alveoli. Those are the little sacs in your lungs that allow the transmission of oxygen across your blood. He might be okay if the oxygen environment is really rich, which unfortunately, being on a tropical island, it's probably not going to be that oxygen rich.
Very humid. Very filled with moisture.
Right. And without any mega, as we discussed, there's going to be no mega flora on the island. He's going to run into some serious oxygen deficits. So if like the natives hear like a really loud crashing noise, Kong is passed out again. And he's sleeping in some corner of the island.
Or tripped on his little stump legs.
Yeah. So in order of like trying to deal with this, and this kind of feeds into his metabolism, potentially, he's going to have to do a whole bunch of different things. He's potentially going to have to hibernate at night. But as we talked about, for a large animal like a bear, hibernation is going to be a problem. So maybe he'll do like a cat and he'll just kind of sleep for 2/3 of his day. So that might be able to allow him to sort of keep his oxygen demands down and his energy sort of down. With that, or he's just going to have to be really careful about his level of activity. There's going to have to be lots of breaks, lots of time in between, lots of sit downs. He can't really stress himself or really like move himself along. And as much as he may want to save those camera wielding maidens that come to his island, he may have to just sit this one out and let the skull crawlers get everybody.
So the
oxygen is going to be really working against him. Cardiovascular wise, his heart is going to be absolutely enormous. And it's just going to be breathing at like an incredible rate. And in order to try and get blood perfused, the biggest thing that he's going to have to fight against is gravity. He's going to have to try to shift these huge volumes of blood up to his brain, up to the rest of his body. So he might have some solutions. I saw a couple of articles online that were discussing. So in you or I, we have valves in our veins to try and help sort of with like the movement of blood back to the heart. He may have to have valves in his arteries. But that's going to have...
I thought the valves in the veins were to stop the blood from flowing the wrong
way. They are.
And then arteries, you don't have that. Correct?
Yeah. So the artery, there's enough pressure that we're able to basically shift that blood upwards as the heart continues to pump. The problem is that between pumps, where basically his heart relaxes to fill, all of the weight of his blood is going to be basically coming back down his arterial system, and it's going to be back filling on his heart. So if he's got arterial valves, he might be okay. They're going to have to be huge, and they're going to be under a lot of pressure, and he's going to be at risk for a lot of heart conditions. Again, very much dependent on his diet. And then the other big thing that he's going to have to fight from both a cardiovascular and a respiratory system, his hemoglobin will theoretically be able to make his needs. He's a big guy, but he's going to be perfusing a lot of body area. But he's really going to have to work on the fact that he's going to need a lot of iron, like a lot of iron. And I didn't finish those calculations, but like we're talking like, you know, a Sudburyan meteorite sort of every month kind of thing, or just like the world's largest iron pills. Like Costco is going to be working overtime trying to take care of this poor guy.
Yeah.
Right.
Anyway, Dave, I think the last thing we wanted to touch on was the hair factor.
Yeah, so that's going to be his last sort of point, which is Kong can't have hair.
All those pubes.
He cannot have, he is going to overheat like nobody's business in terms of he's on a tropical island. He is covered in hair from head to toe.
He's going to get sunburned.
Maybe he's going to have to develop melanin because he cannot have the air. And I struggled with whether or not he could have fingers because they're going to be a real problem.
Why are you taking all these limbs away?
If he could vote on whether or not he wanted any of these changes, he would not be voting. For a while there, I was trying to do calculations with him just having stumps. And it's a lot better on his cardiovascular system. But the only advantage with him having fingers and long limbs is going to be that if he runs a lot of capillary beds and blood vessels through all those, he's going to be able to bleed off heat the same way that like desert hares do it through their ears, or the same way that elephants do it through their ears. So that's the other thing, is he's going to have some, either he's going to be hairless, and or so he's going to have something that he can bleed heat off of, because it's just going to be like a huge problem. And that, or he's just going to have to sit in the water all the time, every day, nonstop.
So one thing that might work, I know anatomically gorillas for primates have the smallest penis relative to body size, but maybe he has an enormous scrotum.
How do you know that?
I know things. Maybe with the... So maybe he has an enormous
scrotum
and
very
small testicles.
This was never part of any of my research.
So he has this massive sail-like structure that can just radiate heat.
Yeah, you've got to think of the scrotum, man.
So Adam's vote is for an absolutely enormous scrotum to try and bleed his heat. A just super well-vascularized scrotum that he's just going to be...
I mean, we're talking about structures on the body of a mammal that already exists, instead of putting, you know, some massive ears on it that, you know, primates don't have, or... a massive sail on his back like a dinosaur. No, he has a massive scrotum, small testicles, so he just stretches it out, and it just radiates heat.
So what, we have scenes where Kong's just, like, standing outside flapping his scrotum in the air to try and lose body heat?
Oh, God. That's one helicopter he's not swatting out of the sky.
Well,
that's the deleted scene you missed.
Adam was discussing. He's like, well, if we were to take away, you know, Kong's limbs, he could just drag himself around like a skull crawler. But it sounds like Adam wants something else dragging along behind him as he walks through the woods. So,
that'd be so inconvenient. Ugh.
Okay, so in summary, Kong...
No, he's got to throw it over his shoulder like a revolutionary soldier.
Oh my God. Wrap it around his legs,
and we've got major problems associated with his metabolic rate, with his skeletal structure, with his musculoskeletal, with his cardiovascular, with his respiratory, and just simply with his integument, with his skin. He's just going to have major problems with that.
So in summary, he's going to be a hairless, fingerless, toeless thing, shuffling around on all fours, just sitting around breathing... Shaking me.
He can't eat and breathe at
the same
time.
He'll probably pass out.
It would
gonna
be a very different movie.
He's going to deforest the vegetation very quickly.
Dear God.
Yeah, but how big are those poops, though? That's what I want.
So that was not something I calculated. I'm now thinking, I didn't even get into like his digestive system.
Yeah, fair enough, yeah.
The nice thing that I figured out is it turns out I had heard this rumor years and years and years ago that the sperm whale sperm is something, or blue whale sperm, is like a meter long. Yeah. And I remember thinking at the time, I'm like, that would make absolutely no sense. Because like from a cellular perspective,
it's a single cell.
Yeah, right? Like you can't have something that's going to crush like a mouse if you laid waste to an area.
Yeah.
So luckily, most of his cells are going to be the same size. They're going to be a little bit bigger, like his red blood cells and his, like, all of his other cells. There's just going to be a lot more of them. And he's not necessarily going to be smarter. I read a bunch of stuff online that was like, oh, well, if he has a bigger brain, he's going to be smarter. Like, we know that rats are often smarter than your average golden retriever or many of the other animals. Brain size does not correlate to intelligence.
Yeah.
And like
Neanderthals had bigger brains than we did.
Yeah, well, they had a different structure. They think they might have had a larger frontal lobe.
Yeah, okay.
My brain's probably bigger than yours, because I have a Chiari malfunction.
Yeah, well, you've got a fucking weird head. Good for you.
But you are going to have to deal with, Adam does raise an interesting point. When Kong urinates, it's going to be a large for the amount of volume that he's taking in. Remember, all of that volume is going to have to come out. So there's just going to be tracts of land on the island unless he's peeing in one spot. I mean, like, we know how water can erode the Grand Canyon, and we know that urine can often take on acidic properties, which means that he's going to be laying waste to sections of the island. If he ever turns on a bad morning to face the village, they're gone. All right, the flood will just wash them away.
Jesus Christ.
You're also going to set up a really interesting little micro ecosystem, or a macro ecosystem in this case, because of how large it is, within those urine tracks. Right. Because you have all kinds of interesting bacteria, plants, and who knows what, maybe even insect communities that thrive off of that,
nitric acid, uric acid. I am praying that Kong's mother taught him not to pee into the lake. Because this...
Also, one thing I read a while back that is about, in mammals at least, it doesn't matter how big the bladder is or how big the organ itself is. Most mammals take about 15 seconds to empty a bladder.
Which is so cool.
So Kong is taking 15 seconds to empty a bladder that is conservatively the size of a bus.
The screen power is going to be incredible. And the 15 seconds is really, really cool because we think it's the maximum amount of time because we're all really vulnerable when we're peeing. But we also don't want to be peeing nonstop. So evolution came up with this perfect number and it's like, all right, you can stop and pee for 15 seconds because you can't pee all the time or you'll leave a trail that predators can find you or you'll be vulnerable for a lot of time. But you also can't sit there and pee for a minute because something's going to come up and they're going to be like, yeah, this is my time to get at him. He's vulnerable.
No.
Oh, man. I did not think of the pee stream.
It's really interesting in terms of it's something that's working against Kong.
You got to think of the pee stream.
All right.
Naomi Watts is delightful, my friends, but I didn't come here to see any of them.
Get to the fucking monkey! Get to the fucking monkey!
Okay, well, let's move on to the ecology half then. So,
well done, Dave.
Yeah,
well done.
That was enlightening, but I do believe that is not the Kong we want to see on the big screen. Anyway,
not going to sell too many toys.
So to start off with, the first thing we did to try and figure out how big Kong, how if Kong could, you know, survive on this island was to try and figure out how big the island was. There are a couple of shots in the movie where you see a map that's kind of got old military grid squares, which is supposedly 100 kilometers by 100 kilometers. And we said from the map that the island's max area is potentially 6,000 kilometers squared. We pushed it up a bit to be conservative to kind of help him out to maybe 9,000 or 10,000, which is about the size of Puerto Rico. But that is a very generous estimate.
Especially considering how fragmented the landscape of Skull Island is.
Yeah.
A lot of archipelagos, a lot of little islands.
Yes, yeah. There's one big down in the south. There's one huge archipelago that's just kind of like little, a Halong Bay type rocky upcross.
Yeah.
But the thing is, I mean, the vegetation, like I said, we don't see any megaflora. All the trees are the same size, so I don't think he could... I mean, he'd just be stripping forests every day.
Yeah, unless he's getting his nutrients from these... this strange world where they have these animal-plant hybrids and they have cellulose in an animal body, which you don't have because it's a plant thing.
Yeah. There's a potentially, like, for instance, lions have evolved glycogenesis, which is whereby you're able to get carbohydrates from protein.
Okay.
I mean, there's the potential that he's evolved glycogenesis, but I don't really think so. Because, I mean, he does seem to eat a lot of the squid, but he doesn't seem to have any... I mean, also, if you look at his teeth, it's not like he has... It doesn't look like...
Those are carnivore teeth.
He's got carnivore teeth, but, I mean, he's still got, like, the front molars of a primate. He's
got the omnivore teeth.
Yeah, he's got omnivorous teeth. So he's potentially eating a bit of meat, but it's not the main part of his diet.
Okay.
But do we think that at least with this weird hybrid garimp that he is, garimp. Could he be an obligate carnivore? Because I don't think that we ever see him eating vegetation.
We don't. We only ever see him eating squid is the only thing we see him eating.
and people.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Although it's never clear if he actually eats the guy that falls out of the helicopter, because then we cut to the sandwich scene. Yeah,
It's not clear.
He falls down, then you see Mark Evan Jackson eat a sandwich, like chopped down right that second. And we know from Rampage that gorillas eat people. So.
Yeah. Right, that's in the textbooks. Jane Goodall wrote long stories on that.
Anyway, but regardless of that, the island, like the size they've grown to is really interesting, because I was aware of the island rule before I did this, which I thought was the fact that if you have species on an island, they tend to grow a bit larger. This generally happens because islands tend to have lower numbers of species richness, so you have less species on there, and because that lessens the competition for certain animals, they grow bigger. However, the island rule actually states that if you have large animals, they grow smaller, and primates definitely correspond to this. So there's been a couple of rules whereby they've looked at the size of primates. Once they're on islands, they get smaller. There's actually a type of an early hominid they found called Homo florescens. They thought it was another species. It may just be that that species evolved on the island of Flores and became smaller.
I know what you're talking about. The people that are supposed to be like hobbits. Like they're less than a meter tall.
They're probably offshoots of humans who migrated to the island.
They found them in caves.
Smaller. Yeah, cave dwellers. Troglodytes in the strictest sense.
And one thing to bring up this interesting with the island rule, we have to keep in mind where this island is supposed to be, like right along the equator. Yeah. Right. And at least for large herbivores, you have the latitudinal gradient in size, where the further you move from the equator, the larger the organism is. And because we're not quite sure where Kong fits in as far as being an omnivore, a true carnivore, a true herbivore, whatever, that's something to think about, where normally something that close to the equator is going to be really small. You have the kudu, which is a deer that like you can almost hold in your hand. But then you have, up in the north, these massive, almost 3 meter tall elk and gigantic deer.
And that's basically, there's a couple of reasons for that. One is, like I said, that release from competition that comes with lower species richness as you go further up. Another one is what we were talking about before with Dave, the fact that if you have bigger body sizes, that's a worse surface area to volume ratio, and you take on, it's quite bad for losing heat and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
But we had to kind of figure out where this island was. Now, this was a lot of fun. There was a map on there that put it at 11.0503 north, 108.2772 east. Yeah, in the comic. And that puts it on mainland Vietnam. So we kind of had to ignore that.
I mean, I guess we can just assume that one of the writers thought, like, hey, they're in the Vietnam. It's the Vietnam War. Let's put it...
So Samuel L. Jackson really didn't have to go anywhere. He just got in his car and drove over to Kong Island.
Drove over to Skull Island.
His helicopter.
We put it somewhere in the South China Sea, which makes it an oceanic island.
Okay.
But the fact that it's an oceanic island means that all the species arrived by immigration.
Right.
So that means that those storms that surround the island weren't always there.
Or something is somehow finding a way to get over the storm system and drop it straight from the top. Because the entire movie is sunny and beautiful and tropical, which means the light is getting through somehow, and this storm system somehow is only in the ring.
So do we have to figure out whether or not Kong had wings then at some point, that he could like fly himself in and like gently land on the island?
No, they rafted. They would have rafted like an iguana.
Oh, so skin flaps.
No, riding
along. I thought you were going to say that he just simply like floated in on his scrotum. He jumped from a really high point and then just parachuted down. Scrotum.
It's like a sail. You jump on a log.
Hang gliding with his scrotum. Yeah.
Yes.
But the other thing is that so the amount of time it takes a creature like that to evolve, for instance, for whales to evolve, right? From tiny little artiodactyls, right? Little hoof kind of mammals on the ground, pig wolf looking things. They were, because all the whales were originally predators.
Right.
That took 20 million years, right, for them to evolve, and that's considered a very short time span for that sort of range. So, again, we had to be generous and say that maybe it took Kong 10 million years to evolve to that size. After the last ice age, so it's potentially a matter of fact that. The island was connected to other land masses, and that the Kong species evolved on a larger landmass, and then because they're protected, they died out everywhere else except this one island.
Or it could possibly have been a larger group of islands that were eventually either worn away or they went below sea level or whatever happened, and that's all the only chunk that's left. Mm. And so you once had this massive population that could solve the inbreeding problem. You once had this massive population that covered this entire landmass. It was, you know, maybe the size of Tasmania or even Australia, but now it's down to a little island the size of Puerto Rico, and you have one Kong.
But I still think that for all the other species to have died out on all the other islands, because we're presuming that all the species that exist on this island only exist on this island, I still think that landmass has to have been isolated since before the start of the last ice age, which was about 3 million years ago.
Okay.
So it's been isolated for a long, long time.
But it definitely would have been, I think it's more likely kind of what you're saying earlier, that it would have been connected to maybe mainland Southeast Asia. Because you see the gigantic yak-looking creature that we see looks more like an Asian yak than it does a European cow or an American.
And that's another issue, creature. Is that they've evolved fairly recently, those buffaloes, like water buffaloes. Ah. I think a water buffalo is the closest thing that they kind of resemble. So anyway, but the good thing is that like islands in that sort of area are characterized by really high rainfall, really high temperature, low...
Really high temperature isn't going to help him.
No, not at all. But you get a high, really high precipitation as well. Like I said, we never see that, but yeah, that's going to help him with the fresh water intake. And like I said, the fact that there's variation in elevation means that there's potentially some really deep lakes out there too.
Yeah.
But the big issue here is that, like I said, the island rule should make him smaller, not bigger. But we just have to, you know, discount that.
One thing that we could think about with the size is possibly he's this, maybe a common ancestor. He could be the missing link for the humans and the rest of the primates. But you could have what happens with crocodilians, where there is no limit on how big they can get. The only problem is that once you get to a certain size, it becomes impossible to find enough food to sustain yourself. So either this island has some really weird, amazing food sources where you can have a ton of nutrients and it's incredibly nutrient rich with a relatively small portion size, or magic.
Yes, I forgot magic. None of my calculations took into account magic.
Scientists always forget magic.
Anyway, so that's the island biogeography stuff kind of taken care of. But look, I don't think it's going to be able to hold him up, and I don't think he's going to be able to have evolved in that time, but... Yeah.
It couldn't have done one of him, much less a population.
And this is the thing, okay? So in the comics, we see a tribe of 10 Kongs. Now, that just... 10. Only 10. Yeah, well, I counted 10 in the one picture where they're all fighting the Skullcrawlers. It's, But the Skullcrawlers, okay.
Because their entire civilization got whittled down to just Kong's parents.
Yeah, yeah. And, well, Kong's parents died. In the comic, Kong's parents die straight away after he's born. Yeah. There's this ridiculous scene where he's like kind of Bruce Wayne in the alleyway, just standing there screaming about his two dead parents who are next to him. It doesn't make any sense. It's a real weird scene. I do not recommend reading the comic. I think it's, unless you like real weird creatures, because there's some really cool like inventive creatures in there. None of them are realistic in any sense, and none of them would work, but they are very inventive.
The giant crocodile
is pretty cool. Yeah. And I like those weird, like, the hyena shark hybrid things. The death jackals. Yeah, that's very, very strange, yeah.
They're so voracious, they literally eat themselves.
There's some interesting stuff in there, but, like, the story itself is very, very weird. Anyway, let's talk about competition for a second. Like, the fact that you have two, essentially, apex predators on that island, the Skullcrawlers and Kong, is a real issue. I mean, you would have to have massive niche differentiation between the two, so they'd have to inhabit very kind of...
Which I think we do have, because Kong isn't so much a predator, it's just a massive omnivore, we think. Based on what his closest relatives are and his teeth structures. But the Skullcrawlers definitely predators. But if he... I mean, we still never ever see him consume vegetation. But we assume that's most of his diet.
The one of the issues with the Skullcrawlers, though, is that one of the potential solutions, I guess, is the fact that they mentioned that like the bombs that he dropped woke a bunch of them up. So I'm assuming they spend a bunch of time underground, which is, I mean, doesn't make any sense that they go bigger unless there's like massive caverns down there and a lot to eat. But if we assume that they spend...
Including each other.
Exactly. They could be cannibalizing down there.
Yeah.
And I think it's less that they woke them up, is that I just watched this scene right before we started this, It's that they opened these caverns to the underground up. What Kong had done was seal a lot of them, those Skullcrawlers knew not to go to those anymore. But those bombs opened up fresh holes. You see a fresh hole. You see one of those gigantic water buffaloes down, and a younger Skullcrawler consuming.
So Kong had grown up and sealed a lot of that sort of stuff off. Okay. Yeah, that makes a lot more sense then, because that explains why you would have two of these predators on the island at the same time, because that just doesn't work.
And also, if we're talking about the island not being able to sustain him, the comics, which I guess are technically canon with this, talk about how the Skullcrawlers have such an insane metabolism. They always look like they're gaunt and starving.
Yeah, they're constantly,
So if you have an organism bigger than Kong that has a metabolism a million times faster than his... Yeah. Unless they're eating each other and there's a shit ton of them underground.
There's got to be a lot of, food for them underground. Also, it's the book is really weird. It talks about the Skullcrawlers arriving. Like, unless there's, underground passageways between islands, that does not work at all. Like, they had to have evolved on that island chain. Theoretical, island chain that was there beforehand.
Well, their body type lends itself to swimming, much like a crocodile.
Yeah, true. Especially with the fact they've only got the two legs at the front, but
two legs and a very long sinewy tail like a snake.
Yeah, true. So they could have swum to the island at some point. Yeah, from a larger, and then the.
But where do they come from?
Exactly. Yeah, that doesn't really make sense. Yeah, I do really like that but creature design, could have been... the whole the fact that there's two legs,
the and terrifying death mask.
I think that's actually really cool.
I like that it's kind of a misdirect, because those little empty, those dead sockets aren't really their eyes. Their actual eyes are
their eyes are tiny, which kind of makes sense because they spend so much time in the dark that you wouldn't really have them. Yeah.
Right.
Anyway. Right.
And it's all about their sense of smell, that the comic also touches on that.
It could also be that the Skullcrawlers only retreated underground during the last ice age, because temperature's a lot less variable underground.
And maybe they used to be more marine, because... Well, that would have been way too early, because John Goodman's character mentions 30 years before, he was on a boat that was attacked by some monster, some mindless, destructive creature that maybe was
we never find out what exactly that is, do we?
No.
Okay.
Mm-mm. Maybe it was King Ghidorah.
Yeah. Could be.
Yeah.
I don't think so, but yeah. The Skullcrawlers probably, maybe arrived on the island from a larger island chain that has since died out on, because, I don't know, maybe it couldn't sustain them anymore. And they retreated underground when the last ice age hit 2.7 million years ago. And then, they've been evolving. Right. They come out sporadically and then, maybe their population reached a high enough level that they started interacting with the Kongs. And that's how the War of the Gods, as it's put in the comic, kicked off.
That almost immediately destroyed all the Kongs.
Yeah, which is, that's the weirdest thing.
So okay, so they do answer that.
And then they had to... And they had to get above ground at that point.
But then there's enough food for them left, and they retreat back underground where they just consume each other.
I guess it could be,
That, or there's some other organisms down there we're not seeing. Because at least in terrestrial ecosystems, you have massive underground, arthropods, massive centipedes, millipedes, all these detritivores that eat decomposing materials, and they're full of protein. So maybe there's these, everything else on the island is enormous. We don't see too many of them, but there could be all these massive arthropods underground.
A massive fungus underground would solve some of our problems, too.
Which we already have in North America. There's a fungus that is something 20, 25 square kilometers in Oregon, and it's one organism.
Well, you've got those big-ass buffaloes as well. Now, I don't know how... I'd love it, because you see him, save the buffalo from the helicopter? I'd love it if he saved it and then just... He's got a little pin out the back that he just keeps them all in.
Breaks its neck and starts drinking his blood.
He's just got a little farm of buffalo at the back of the island. The Brie Larson
grilling him big steak.
Any idea about.
Wow. Yeah. He's constructed a straw. I was actually really disappointed. I was rewatching the film and where you see him take all of the branches off the tree when he's fighting the Skullcrawler.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, fantastic. Kong can make tools. He's totally going to shish kebab the creature. And he even almost twists the end he's trying to sharpen it as the branches are coming off. Yeah. And he clubs him over the head with it. And then drops the sharpened chunk, the fragment that's created into the water. And I was like, what are you doing?
I bet it looked good. Looked real cool.
Why would you club him?
Yes, well,
I mean, maybe he was taking inspiration from Pacific Rim, where we have the
East Coast. Right? That was good fun. I enjoyed that. Yeah.
Yes, I would have really enjoyed if Kong also had just, like, flicked out blades from his arms and been like, this is what I've been doing the entire time, guys. Yeah.
Like Gigan.
Yeah, okay, so look, that's the competition thing taken care of. I guess potentially they could, I mean, you might have enough niche differentiation there for the two to coexist at the same time. But then the last thing is something that we kind of do have an excuse for again, and that's the inbreeding factor.
Have an excuse?
Not an excuse. I'm not trying to like justify the Lannisters or anything here. I'm just, you know, I'm saying that we have a reason that this could potentially work out.
Targaryens were
the
worse.
Australians, yes. Just looking for excuses to take shots at the royal family.
Hey, look, I'm not from Tasmania and I don't like the royal family. Okay, but speaking of the royal family, so for people who don't know, inbreeding depression is the lack of fitness that comes with your cousin's fucking. Yeah, I was gonna.
The accumulation of deleterious
basically
alleles.
Like,
right. So basically, brief genetics lesson. What you have is alleles have. There's like a big copy and a little copy, and they usually go together. And what happens is the big copy overwrites the little copy, and the big copy is what is expressed. Usually, bad alleles are the little copy. Recessive. So what happens when you have a lot of inbreeding? You have people with very similar genes having sex, and they have offspring. And these offspring have a higher chance of getting two copies of that little allele, which means that it will be expressed. And so the bad thing will be expressed, and it just adds up.
Which
and
is
up
where
and
you
up
get Joffrey.
Yeah, that was one generation. That's how you get the Targaryens.
All right, okay, yeah.
Now, we have to assume that like Skull Island has been isolated since at least like the end of the last interglacial period, the end of the last Ice Age.
Right.
So that was, I believe, 17,000 years ago. 11,700 years ago. We see in the comic a shot where there's 10 Kongs in there. Now, let's say absolute maximum you have on that island is 10 Kongs, because we've already established it's hard enough for one Kong to be supported on there. Let's say there's 10 Kongs on that island. There's a lot of inbreeding going on. Like, Kong should, by all rights, have congenital defects out the wazoo. Quite literally, in some cases, out the wazoo.
Like stump legs,
yeah,
toes,
things like that. Okay.
Yeah. We've solved every problem.
It all makes sense. We figured it out.
What could the movie potentially be happening, though, is something called purging, which is basically whereby, as opposed to all those bad alleles stacking up, they actually get removed from the gene pool. Because the really bad alleles, the ones that are lethal, are generally recessive, which means you have to get two of them combining from a parent for them to come along. So if you do have that, that baby's going to die pretty much straight away. So what you can have is, over generations, all those deleterious alleles are gone. We would have to say in this case, because if you've got 10 Kongs on an island, just constantly like staying at 10, there's just so much inbreeding there. We can't have any immigration because that island's totally isolated.
No, and we know that no other. We also have to deal with, so Kong potentially is going to have the same lifespan as a normal gorilla or chimp, in the same way that a lion has the same lifespan as a house cat. Like, scaling up in size doesn't change. So that's also going to mean that they're reproducing in terms of like the frequency and the period that's allowed for inbreeding to occur is going to be much more regular than we originally assumed.
Yeah.
But like,
the helpful thing here, though, is that the fact that density dependence, so basically the fact that it's such a small island keeps the population at such a low level, means that any individuals that are born with reduced fitness are not going to survive for very long.
Now,
which could help them get rid of all those, like I said, the bad genes.
The weird, the shitty. Yeah. Other question, and this is something we didn't think about before, and I'm just thinking about it now.
Yeah.
What proof do we have that Kong is a dude?
They just do a lot of assuming his gender, which in 2018 is not that cool.
It was Vietnam, Adam. They were tough times, all right? It's a different era.
Kong doesn't...
Mainland Vietnam.
Kong doesn't have any obvious genitalia.
No, he doesn't, yeah.
But remember, gorillas, for primates, the smallest penis.
But I'm just playing around with another idea that I hadn't been thinking about, and of course this is way off. What if...
Don't use playing around when we're talking about
what penises. What if Kong is the female of the species and there are smaller males that are roaming around the island that we just never see? The thing is that we would have to have the larger of the two being the female in order to support the growth of a Kong in terms of, like, producing. But if you had these smaller males that we never see that allow for more genetic diversity that basically just wander along, climb up, do their job, and then disappear off into the woods...
Climb up.
They would have to.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
But that doesn't help it, because if you have one female and a ton of males, or one male and a ton of females, all the offspring are related.
Yeah.
And so that's going to make that inbreeding stack up even faster.
Yeah.
Especially if their offspring are having offspring.
As with Lady Kong in 1986, in the comic, the female Kongs do have prominent breasts.
Right, so, right. So we're using that
longer hair.
Right, yes. Yep. No, the obvious factors.
And makeup constantly, also when they're fighting.
Little handbags.
Yeah, so I think if we take that population as having purged out all the deleterious alleles, can potentially work even with that level of inbreeding.
But then evolution becomes impossible, because we're going to basically strive to keep the norm. We're going to fall ourselves into almost like a shark or crocodile situation where we're like, we just can't evolve. We're the biggest predator. Let's just keep going in a straight line.
I think we have to say that they...
It's not that they can't evolve.
I think we have to say that the species
that's an important thing evolved to think about.
On a larger chain of islands where there was a much larger surface area. And then they died out on all those islands, except this isolated little...
Right. Where basically, but I'm saying what purging is going to block is the idea that we get genetic variation that leads to evolution, and the population isn't large enough for that. So we have to assume that the version of Kong that we're seeing is probably the exact same that's existed for the last 10 million, and just all of the other ones that basically are genetically inferior, don't fit that category, are most likely purged.
But you have to keep in mind that evolution takes not only genetic variation, but selection acting on that variation.
Which...
So you could be having all the variation in the world, but if he's already at this top location,
he's got no pressure.
Mentioned sharks earlier, there is variation going on there, but there's no selection on any of that variation.
So, other question, and I don't know if this is what we talked about in terms of we didn't really go into detail. So following the last ice age, beforehand we had all kinds of giant megafauna. Canada had giant sloths, like the rest of the world had like humongous animals. We had this cool little turtle thing, I can't remember what it was called, that had like this giant shell attached to it. But it had a really cool name, actually. But anyways,
could fart fire and teleport 2 inches in any direction.
Yeah, a glyptodont. Glyptodont, I'm sure it's
glyptodont. Yeah, the glyptodont.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's an armadillo.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. So we had all these giant animals, and one of the reasons that we think they went extinct is following the last ice age, we lost a lot of carbon dioxide that at the beginning of the ice age became kind of bound into the water, was absorbed by the water following it, and a lot of these species died out because the big mega flora basically disappeared. The megafauna had nothing to eat. All the smaller guys ended up surviving, and all of our big guys basically disappeared. Yeah. So... how are we getting around Kong having less? It's just because of his diet and because like we're just thinking he'll be fine up there?
I think if we want to try to figure out a reason why it could work, it has to tie back into if this is actually going to work like within the rules of nature. If we're taking for a fact that these floral, fauna, plant, animal hybrids exist, he has to be supplementing his diet with them. Because there is then animal protein and cellulose and fiber and all of that in one package. And they're huge.
And we've already had to go against like our first rule and say that he's gotten bigger on the island somehow as opposed to...
He already broke a whole bunch of the evolutionary rules. Okay.
Yeah, he's...
But then again, he's supposed to be growing with the end goal of being... And Godzilla is three times his
size. Yeah, and we still didn't deal with the fact that he's a juvenile, which means that all of our predictions about how much he's eating, about his energy requirements,
Metabolism is way up.
Everything, he's going to be going through the roughest puberty of any, like, giant monkey in terms of...
he's so...
Yeah, his fridge will be the village.
Yeah. All right, so to summarize our area, we can potentially get around the problem with inbreeding. We can potentially get around the issue with competition with the skull crawlers. We can even potentially get around the whole evolution thing if we just say, oh, he just went the other direction and somehow evolved to be enormous. Yeah, but the issue just remains is that there's not enough vegetation for him and there's not enough to supplement his diet.
No, and he can't meet any of his requirements. And,
yeah.
And one thing we have to remember, first and foremost, he is the last of his kind. So it doesn't matter regardless. There aren't any females. We don't think that he's a female. And as far as I know, there aren't any asexual mammals.
No.
So,
yeah. No. So, I mean, which we kind of knew when we were watching the movie and saw all the dead Kongs kind of in the...
Yeah.
Those are his
a relic. He is a relic, and that species is on the way out. And
again, if he has a gorilla or chimp lifespan, he lives to a maximum of 50 years. So he really doesn't have...
So by the time we get around to Godzilla versus King Kong, he's really at the end of his lifespan.
Yeah, he's going to be elderly, he's going to be gray, he'll probably have fashioned himself a cane out of some sort of ship that's crashed along the coast. And he'll
he wouldn't even make it then.
He'll be sitting off the coast, throwing stuff at Godzilla and yelling for him to get off his lawn. Like,
it's basically Gran Torino. He's an old guy sitting there, and he sees this Japanese thing come along, and he's like, "No, I'm not having it."
And he's super racist.
He's like, "Oh,
were they Cambodian and Green?
Were they? I haven't seen it.
Neither have I.
I don't know. Clint Eastwood's character in that just looks like the kind of dude who doesn't. He's still bitter about World War II.
So Clint Eastwood.
Yeah, Clint Eastwood. Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Place your charges. It's time to show Kong that man is king.
Right, guys. So we've established that King Kong is not the most... he's not going to be the most confident guy. He's taking a minute to take two breaths. He's a hairless, fingerless, slovenly...
stump-legged.
Beast, yeah. He looks a bit like the guy from the Goonies. You know, Sloth from the Goonies. Sloth. Looks like Sloth from the Goonies, except he's, 133 meters tall or whatever.
Yeah, and according to Adam, we'll have a scrotum the size of the Epcot Center, so...
Exactly, yeah. He's an awkward, not the sort of guy you'd want to take home to meet your parents or to the high school dance.
So for the listener at home, he looks like Sam.
Well done, you got me. I concede defeat.
And now everybody listening knows what Sam looks like. They'll be able to spot you on the street.
One of my favorite movie quotes is uttered by Denzel Washington in Training Day.
Ah, we're quoting from the gospel.
Yes. What's his character's name?
It's just Denzel. It's always Denzel.
Filmography, Training Day, Alonzo Harris, right? Detective Alonzo Harris shouts out in the middle of the street, King Kong ain't got shit on me.
On me.
Now, most versions of King Kong, I think, do have shit on Alonzo Harris. Our version, I'm not so sure. So what I want to pose to you guys is who would win in a fight between Detective Alonzo Harris and our King Kong?
It depends. Does he get him high on PCP first?
No. He's not high on PCP.
Angel dust. Same thing.
I mean, if he falls in the right direction of Alonzo Harris and they're like in a New York street while he's giving that speech, King Kong ain't got shit on me, then yes, King Kong will win in that he will flatten Alonzo in the street halfway through his speech.
But will he be able to get up after he's fallen down?
Probably not. No. But for that 30 seconds afterward before King Kong's respiration gives out and he's just done in the middle of the street, he will have won. All right, he will have taken a blow for giant primates without toes and hair and strange other body components everywhere.
But if all King Kong can do is like slowly walk towards Alonzo Harris, because presumably he's not going to be able to walk. Alonzo Harris can still outrun him at this point, right?
Yeah.
So I think Alonzo Harris would win.
I mean, he caught Snoop Dogg in a wheelchair.
I mean, I think Snoop Dogg in a wheelchair could probably outrun this guy.
Absolutely, he could. It depends. Does he have the jump on King Kong?
No, he doesn't get the jump on King Kong. Here's the scenario, right? King Kong ain't got shit on me has just been said. All the residents have gone back, but he hasn't got shot in the ass, right? King Kong walks into the street. Like, it's just arrives in the street after he says that.
Just hanging behind a building this entire time. Nobody's seen him, just doing the King Kong thing. Just like, I'll be fine.
Yeah, Jurassic Park style. It's just appeared there out of nowhere and somehow right. made
eating it. Eating a dog in the backyard.
Yeah, okay, so, but and then he shows up. I think King Kong will be outrun, and eventually his respiratory system would give way and he'd have to sit down. And then Alonzo Hess could just keep running from him for a while, right?
He would just outlast him. I don't think he'd be able to do anything like actually killing him unless he has his guns on him. And he has a fuck ton of guns.
Yeah, I mean, he could just, you know, trip him over. He's good with a shotgun. Just shoot him in the toe, he'll probably...
He doesn't have toes.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Well, that's a good point. Yeah, he's got sort of those weird elephant feet.
Yeah. Like Sam.
Yeah. I feel a well-placed rocket launcher to the scrotum would cause King Kong to bleed out.
So Alonzo has a rocket launcher now. I forgot that part of training day.
He's got access to weaponry. I'm assuming he's going to be able to outrun him. Right? He jumps in a stolen car. He rides around to his buddy with a massive, like, all that weaponry's house. He just picks out a rocket launcher. By the time King Kong arrives, he's just anywhere in the body, I feel, and he bleeds out pretty quickly.
I mean, feasibly as well, he could just keep driving on the highway for like 20 or 30 minutes, and King Kong would never catch him.
I feel like you drive for 5 minutes, King Kong's going to die of exhaustion. It just sounds he should have never gotten to that size. Like, he's not... He can't live. He, as the white girls say, he can't even, so...
Yeah. Okay, well, I think that's a fairly comprehensive solution, that unless King Kong falls in the right direction, in which case he'll probably die later anyway.
As he's dying.
King Kong ain't got shit on Alonzo Harris in this scenario.
I would agree.
All right, so that'll about do it, I reckon. Next week, I've just received word from our fourth member who was in absentia today, TJ. We're going to be breaking down the Ents from Lord of the Rings.
Oh no! Come on!
Oh boy!
You know what it's going to take to build a cardiovascular system for that?
For a tree, yeah, I know.
I got two words for you, Dave. Xylem and phloem.
this is going to be fun, though, because we get to make up a lot more stuff. Because, oh, God, am I going to have to read the fucking Silmarillion? Adam, you're taking the lead on this one. You've got a bloody Lord of the Rings tattoo.
Sweet.
Oh, yeah. Right. All right.
There we go. Okay, good. So I
can, Adam, okay.
I can relax a little bit for the next one. Anyway.
Yeah, because you work so hard most of the time.
Okay, thanks for listening, everyone. If you want to get in touch with us in between podcasts, you can reach me on Twitter at samperrinntnu, PERRIN, or you can reach Adam at harsik_Adam. Thanks for listening. Thanks also to Katie Heath for helping us come up with Cinematica and Amelia. And thanks to my colleague, André Ofstad, for helping out with inbreeding in primates. Okay, see you next week, guys. Bye.